This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Nolan Wells. The timeline. The complete timeline as we know it right now. That is what we are about to embark upon going through. Because there's a lot of information out there and misinformation out there and opinions out there. Let's work our way through it, shall we? And as we do, your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. A GPS unit does not have a story to protect. It doesn't get nervous. It doesn't lawyer up. It doesn't quietly revise what it recorded once it finds out somebody died. On July 4th, a boat pulled off a private dock in the Ocean Springs area at 9:56 in the morning. It hit Horn Island at 11:14. That's Mississippi Department of Marine Records data obtained by CBS News, and nobody's disputed a second of it so far. Just about everything else from that day seems to be up for grabs. The night before, there's no data log. There's a kitchen. On July 3rd, Nolan Wells cooked dinner for his parents, according to his mother, Christine Wansley. He was 18, 6'1", a wide receiver who'd signed with Southwest Mississippi Community College. He told her he was heading out. He said he loved her, gave her a kiss and a hug, and left for a friend's house where he was spending the night. Wansley says that's the last time she heard from her son. He drove himself over. His car stayed at that house. Set at his keys. Horn Island sits about 10 miles off the Mississippi coast, south of Ocean Springs. It's federally protected land inside the Gulf Islands National Seashore. There's no shelter out there, no drinking water, no staff, no way to react if something goes wrong with any sort of official capacity on hand like that, and no way to reach it except by private boat. On the 4th of July, it is packed. Kristen Shepherd, a longtime friend of Nolan's, who was out there that day, told ABC News that multiple boats carrying their friends came in that morning and that the group had been drinking since late morning. Shepherd described roughly 300 people crowded onto their stretch of island, a lot of them former Ocean Springs High classmates. He called it one of the last hurrahs before everybody went back to school or work. Shepherd also explained what happened to everybody's phone. And it turns out that one of the loudest fights here is about the phones. He said Nolan set his phone on the dash of a friend's boat next to maybe 15 others. Nobody was texting. Everybody was in the salt water, according to the friend. Around 3 in the afternoon is where the record goes soft. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office says Nolan was last seen near the island around 3. His friends say the same. Ashley Cole, a Jackson County judge, and the stepmother of Warren, one of the boys on the boat, said her stepson last saw Nolan around 3. Mississippi Today reported that witnesses told authorities 3 or 4. Nobody at a beach party is checking a watch, so a little slack there is going to be normal. What isn't normal is what happens to the story at that exact hour. Okay? Two accounts exist for why Nolan didn't get back on that boat. And before we get there, let's talk about the phones for just a second here, because that is a big point of contention in this entire story. And it's understandable. If your mom, and you know Nolan uses his phone all the time and documents all portions of his life, as so many people do, to see a gap in that window, especially at an event where there's a lot of people around where normally you would be taking, or you would think one would be taking photos, and it's dead and there's nothing there on that Snapchat, you're going to look at that, you're going to go, God, this looks like it was deleted. That'd be my initial reaction. But I think it's important to look at the context here. People on a boat, everyone's saying their phone is on the boat. Everybody's saying nobody's using their phone out in the water. Well, then that gap is fairly explainable. I guess It should be tested, though, to see if that is in fact true against everybody else's phone. Is everybody else's phone on that boat at the exact same place where Nolan's was? That could be looked at. That could be tracked with GPS data. That could be tracked with the phone data if they are to compare other people's phones. I'm not saying it's true this way or that, but I'm saying there's your logical explanation as to why there may not be anything on his phone for a gap of time leading up to his death. Not necessarily things deleted, but a phone not being in use because he was in an environment in which you wouldn't be using your phone. Just saying. I'm not saying I know that for a fact, but I'm saying that is a plausible explanation. A very plausible explanation and researchable, verifiable. See if it's the trend with everyone else. If that story, in fact, adds up. And if it does add up, well, then that's what it is. If it doesn't, if it turns out everybody else is out there with their phones and he's the only one who doesn't have it, then that's a little odd if he's a guy who likes to use his phone. But again, this is a point in the story where I'm saying we just don't know. And a conjecture out of one area, making a statement saying this is what he normally does, okay, I get where you're coming from. I get where the pattern would be off. But sometimes patterns do go off. Sometimes there are deviations in behavior, and that might be very explainable. It might be. Might. Not saying it is. Saying it might. And again, with this case, I'm not going down any road here of it's all this or it's all that until we actually have information, which we don't as of this recording. That's why we're going through the timeline right now. But I think that's important. What are your thoughts about the phone and where that's all at? Tell me in the comments section. Is it very plausible that that's all it is? Or is that not accurate? Is that not true? Is that not a possibility? Tell me why. Tell me why you think so. In our comments section on Substack and YouTube, those links are in the description. Two accounts exist for why Nolan didn't get back on that boat, and they can't both necessarily be true. But again, lots of moving thoughts in the moment of all this going on, where maybe they can, maybe two versions of this were said. Maybe you have a man in the middle who's fighting with the idea of going off with his girl that he met, telling his friends, I'm going to catch a ride back with somebody else. I'll figure it out. All right, man. Well, he wouldn't do that. You know, he's a good boy. He would never, we've always told him not to do. Yeah, well, you know what? You say, I'm a parent too. You can expect certain things of your kids, and your kids can go completely off the rails, especially a teenage boy that is seeing an attractive woman that he wants to chat with. Rules sometimes go out the window in terms of, I'm going to go back with my friends. They were like, it's plausible. It's also plausible that he did tell the girl. Maybe he changed his mind. I'm going to go back with my friends. He goes back, the boat's gone. There are plausible directions for all of this that don't lead to necessarily murder. What those are, what that is, again, we just don't know. But there are so many possible roads here of things happening in real time and decisions being made, and nobody's thinking anything horrible is going to happen other than maybe you got to get a ride back on a boat with some people you don't necessarily know that well. I don't know. That might be a question to ask too. Did he get on somebody else's boat? Not the friends. Not the ones with the bilge pump that went out. Maybe it is true. He did tell them, hey, I'm going to go hang out with this girl here. I'll get a ride back later. Did he end up with some people that we don't necessarily know about yet? That aren't this group of friends? Because this group of friends, I'm sorry, this circle does not appear to be a nefarious, you know, race-baiting, hateful, you know, nefarious group to this young man. They appear to all get along very well, no matter what color your skin, ethnicity, sexual preference, insert whatever diversity here. The friends say they're all a big, diverse group of friends. Doesn't appear to be. You know, the Klan out for a boat ride at all. But it's interesting how some areas of the internet seem to contextualize it that way. Even though there's like no evidence to that at all, as of right now. Again, I'm saying I'm open to all possibilities here, but I'm saying not going to jump through the hoop that someone wants to jump through over here because they're collecting a big payday and a lot of attention on it. If they go, look at me, we're doing this. Okay, great. Well, we don't have facts on anything yet. I would be more curious about another boat, about another group of people, if there's anything nefarious going on here, or a riptide. Or a riptide. But two accounts for why Nolan didn't get back on that boat exist. The friend's version, relayed by the sheriff, by Cole, by Shepherd, is that he chose to stay because he'd met a young woman that day and planned to catch a ride back with another boat. Ben Crump, the civil rights attorney the family retained on July 7th, says the young woman tells it differently. According to Crump, she says Nolan told her he was going to go back to the boat with the guys. One of them is telling the truth, Crump said. One is not. Or maybe they both are. That's what he told both of them, and he got caught in the middle, changing his mind. I don't know. I mean, there are possibilities there. Then there's a timestamp that didn't surface publicly until long after everybody's minds were already made up. Around 4 in the afternoon, the operator of that boat called a private towing company. Audio obtained by NBC News and later aired on ABC has him saying they're at the west, or has him apparently saying they're at the west tip of Horn. The bilge pump quit and the boat is sinking. The dispatcher asks if everyone on the boat is in good health. The caller says everyone's on board. That call changes the shape of the afternoon. It doesn't tell you where Nolan was. It does establish independently that the people on the boat had a mechanical emergency inside the same window they say they last saw him. They weren't idling at a sandbar making a cold decision. They apparently were sinking. The GPS picks it back up from there. The boat left the island at 4:31, reporting citing GPS and emergency records says it got towed several miles before it ran right again. It moved into Fort Bayou around 5:52 and reached the dock at 6:06. At 7:19 that evening, it went to the Fort Bayou boat launch, came out of the water, and traveled overland to its owner's home in Biloxi. Every one of those numbers is on paper. That leaves an hour and a half. Nobody can Phil. He was last seen around 3. The distress call went out around 4. The boat was gone at 4:31. Crumps asked the obvious question out loud, where was Nolan for that hour? There's no public answer to it. Doesn't appear he was on the boat. That seems to be fairly well-established fact. He wasn't on the boat. Not from the sheriff, not from the friends, not from Crumps' own investigators. He was somewhere, but he wasn't on the boat. The next documented moment lands at 11 that night. The U.S. Coast Guard confirmed to WLOX that a friend of Nolan's contacted the agency around 11 p.m. on July 4th. The Coast Guard wouldn't say anything else about that call except that it didn't require Coast Guard assistance. That I find interesting. Didn't require Coast Guard. Love to hear that call. 7 minutes later, at 11:07, Christine Wansley's phone rang. It was Warren calling from the mainland. She hadn't detailed what he said. She called a friend whose two sons are close with Nolan and asked if they'd seen him. They hadn't, but they pulled up his Snapchat location. Wansley pulled up his Life 360. The two apps disagreed. Life 360 put his phone back on land. Around midnight, she started calling law enforcement. What she got was back and forth between agencies over who owned a missing person case on an island sitting out in the Mississippi Sound. An 18-year-old was unaccounted for on a barrier island in the dark. And the live question was whose paperwork it was. Jackson County Sheriff's Office eventually opened a report. Nolan's parents met a deputy at a McDonald's parking lot and told him everything they knew. And then came the retrieval. A friend of Christine's went to get Nolan's phone from the house where his friends were. Wansley said there were issues. She said she got a parent on the phone and spelled it out that she was Nolan's mother, that they needed his phone, that they were trying to find him. Elmore Wansley went for the car keys at the other house, the one where Nolan slept the night of July 3rd, he said the boys there told him they didn't know where the keys were. That held until a girl who'd been at the house earlier said over the phone that Nolan left them on top of the Xbox. Elmer called the situation tense. He said he felt like he was lied to. He said once he had the keys, the people inside locked everything and wanted nothing to do with what was outside that door. That's conjecture. That's feeling. Could it be nothing more than he put his keys on the Xbox and the girl is the only girl, is the only one who noticed? I don't know. Seems rather plausible to me. Take all the drama out of the situation. Where's his keys? He's not there. Most of the guys, I don't know. That seems about normal for most teenage boys or men. And the girl's like, oh, I saw him on the Xbox. Okay. And you're a parent. You're like, where's my son? You may be thinking everyone feels a little suspicious at this moment in time, whether they are or not. That's not a knock on the parents. That's understanding human behavior. I would probably be doing the same thing. What do you mean you don't? You left without your friend and like, this is okay? Like, what the hell is wrong with you? I'll tell you what's wrong with them. They're teenagers. They make bad decisions. They're kind of known for that. If you haven't been playing along with what teenagers are like at home, let me introduce you to that fine world. They're idiots. I was, you were, we all were at that point in time. And these kids are no different. You make bad decisions. You make bad choices. You just do. Because you're young and you're dumb and you're inexperienced and you've never really been in a situation where, well, my friend said they were going to go do this. Okay, I'll trust him. You're not like, no, dude, let's really get back. It could be a mess if you don't know where you're at. Nobody has the foresight because they've never been in life situations before. Unfortunately, they're entering real life, the real world, with quite a trauma on their hands. But I'm sorry, in my opinion, none of their behavior as of this moment looks all that extremely suspicious. It looks like idiot teenagers who were not expecting anything like this to be happening around them because they were just living their normal dumbass teenage lives. Self-centered, focusing on oneself, not much of the external world around you. And shit went horribly sideways. Not knowing information can look like conspiracy. Conflicting reports can look like conspiracy. And look, it could be something nefarious. It very well could be. But I'm not feeling this is to be a glaring red sign here that is being made out to be at this moment in time. Is there a possibility? Yes, we are open to that. We will follow it if it goes that way. But I'm sorry, because someone says and someone feels that the girl knew where the keys were on the Xbox and the boys did it. Well, that kind of just sounds pretty freaking normal to me, honest to God. You put them on the Xbox, the girl noticed. Okay, show me how that's, I don't know, if there's more to this that we are not hearing about, if there's more to this of why he was feeling this might be suspicious, I'd love to hear it and absorb that and take that into account. But just a feeling at that moment in time when you're already going to be on edge, I get it. You're going to feel suspicious. You're going to feel suspicious of the guy at McDonald's drive-thru if you go through it. Were you there that day? You just would. I'm not faulting him, but I'm also saying feelings are not fact. That's important, especially on a case like this. When the phone came back, Christine and her sister went through it. She said there were no photos and no saved snaps from that day, and maybe that was explainable, like we talked about earlier. And they opened it inside the 24-hour window of Snapchat. Okay. She said that's not how her son operated at a social gathering, that he documented everything. The family believes something got deleted. I understand. I get it. I understand that too. But again, if everybody's put their phones on the boat and they're all in the water and they're not using their phones, and this is pretty much the consensual story of everyone there, friends and not friends, people who know him, people who don't know him, people who are on other boats have nothing to do with the party. And everybody's like, yeah, people don't typically use their phones out there. They're on the boats. That's what they do because they don't want to risk their $1,500 mini computer getting destroyed in the water while everybody's drinking on the island. I don't know. I was out on a boat recently, I left my phone on the boat, and pretty much everyone else did too. This is not abnormal behavior when you're out there on a boat. I guess when's the last time his mom and dad were out on a boat doing this? And what did they do with their phones? Not just what you think one would do, but what the people actually do in those situations. My initial thought would be, I'm going to take a bunch of photos here. I thought that not that long ago when I was out on a boat and I got into the water. I'm like, nah, I'm going to leave it up there. I'm just going to enjoy the day. I'm going to enjoy this. I don't need to document. I don't need to take pictures of it. I'm good. I'm good. But that's me. That's nothing to do with the case. But I'm saying that's how people act on boats. That's what people sometimes do in situations like this. And it's well documented. I mean, again, it doesn't read as super off. The family, though, believes something got deleted. And maybe it did. Snapchat can answer that. And we will get that answer very soon. And once we do, that will lead into whatever direction it leads. And we'll follow it that way. Until then, it's this conjecture. It's not that my conjecture weighs more than yours. It's just, I'm telling you, from my experience, from my prism, as everyone else is talking from their prism, that's how I'm seeing that portion. Shepherd's counter is that hardly any photos exist from that day from anybody because everyone was in the water and nobody was on a phone. On the morning of July 5th, Elmore Wansley got on a boat with Nolan's football coach. He went out to Horn Island himself. He walked the island. He got back in the boat and circled it. He went to the stretch of water where his son's body would later wash up. He saw nothing. He also described what he did see out there. A family had camped overnight on the island. Two other boats were docked. His point was that if Nolan had been stranded, there were people right there who could have helped him. But was he stranded? Or was he caught in a riptide for some reason and ended up washing back up after? At 12:26 that afternoon, Coast Guard Sector Mobile got a request for assistance from the sheriff's office. An urgent marine information broadcast went out and a helicopter launched. That's roughly 13 hours after a friend of Nolan's called the Coast Guard and got told the situation didn't require their help. That right there, the Coast Guard thing. Not necessarily that they had anything to do with the boy's disappearance, but I'm sorry when you're calling for help and someone's missing and you're the fucking Coast Guard. Maybe you go look. You don't wait 13 hours in an environment with known riptides and hundreds of deaths that have occurred there in the past. Just a fucking thought. Both of those calls can be defended somewhat. A late night report that an adult didn't come back from an island where people camp overnight. Maybe the Coast Guard looked at it that way. Well, maybe he's out with friends. Maybe we don't need to do search and rescue. I don't know. Maybe you should have, though. But a parent who hears no assistance required at 11 at night hears something else entirely. Both readings are somewhat reasonable. Only one of them that belongs to a family whose son was already gone. 5 minutes after the request went in at 12:31, the sheriff's office issued a missing person release. 18-year-old black male, roughly 6'1", 180 pounds, last seen on Horn Island on Saturday, July 4th, in blue swim trunks, no shirt, sunglasses. A command post went up at the Lake Mars boat launch at 5:54 that evening. By then, the search had pulled in the National Park Service, Gulf Islands National Seashore, the Coast Guard, and the Mississippi Department of Marine Resources. The Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks came in, along with the Biloxi Fire Department, the Harrison County Sheriff's Office, Jackson County Fire Service, and the United Cajun Navy. Few folks went out and looked. Cajun Navy aircraft went up just before 6 in the morning on July 6. The last search vessels pushed off just before 8. At around 8:45, a U.S. Park Service ranger found a body in the water at the northwest tip of Horn Island just after 11. The family was taken to the coroner's office just before 1 o'clock. Christine Wansley posted on Facebook that the person they found was her son. Jackson County Coroner Bruce Lynn told CNN there was no immediate signs of physical injury. He said the swimsuit matched what Nolan was wearing in the last photograph of him. He also said his office asked for the autopsy to be done at the state medical examiner's lab because of the condition the body was in and to nail down definitively whether there was trauma or foul play. That same day, the sheriff, again, another misstep, said no foul play was suspected. Those two statements aren't technically at war with each other. One office was saying it didn't see anything obvious. The other was saying it wanted the state lab precisely because obvious isn't good enough. Put both of those on the internet the same afternoon and see which one people hear. They clearly heard the one. And not a great choice of words at all from that sheriff. Like, just words matter. Words matter. Crumps pressed hard on where and when the body turned up. His argument is that if Nolan went into the water Saturday, he should have been found Sunday, not Monday, and that Elmore had already searched that exact stretch. Apparently, Crump doesn't understand how currents and tides and oceans work at all. He understands one thing, how to get people really upset based on incomplete information. He's good at that. Doesn't make it fact. The counter comes from the coroner. Lynn told CNN the currents are strong out there, especially at the end of the island, and that there have been drownings around the barrier islands many times over the years, hundreds of times over the years. Brian Trasher of the United Cajun Navy told CNN the beach was packed with boats and people that day, some of them drinking, and that rip currents would have been a real risk to anybody in the water. The autopsy happened on July 7th at the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office Coast Lab. Around 2 that afternoon, Lynn confirmed through dental records that the body was Nolan. And just before 2, the family retained Crump. Just after 3:30, the sheriff's office put out a release asking for original photos, video, and eyewitness accounts from Horn Island on July 4th. It used a specific phrase. It asked for material depicting alleged altercations. I'd ask for material depicting him at all, not just alleged altercations, anything. Altercations, hugs, happiness, anything that he's in is what you'd want, not just something that fits your own narrative. That phrase launched into a video that is already making the rounds. At the July 10th news conference in Harlem, Crump said the video caught Nolan demanding his phone back, asking how he knew it was Nolan's phone. Crump said multiple people identified it. And then on July 13th in Good Morning America, Trayston Shepard said the voice was his own. He said Nolan isn't in the video at all. He said the confrontation was between him and a stranger who started something with him, and that he was yelling at people, holding him back on the boat to let him off so he could keep going. Rolling Stone reported that two other people backed his account. When you jump on information that's not verified and say, see, this is what it is, and it turns out that's not what it is, you look kind of like an idiot. But sometimes people already are going down their narrative route, and then if it's not fitting the narrative, you just stick with your narrative and go, see, this is fact. I'm here to say, I don't know. But I am here to say there's two sides to that too. Not just what one is going to tell you. One that fear appears to be fairly hijacked with a very specific motive and a very specific narrative that they want out there. And it's not necessarily the family themselves. I'd say it's some of the folks that have surrounded the family and are using them as a podium for their own agenda and attention. That's one video. There have been others. A photo of an alleged pool party went around and got reposted by Crump's own account. Shepard told Rolling Stone that party happened on June 27th. Asked about it, Crump said reposting something isn't the same as authenticating it. WLOX has reported that AI-generated photos and video tied to the case are circulating too. So somewhere out there, people are manufacturing fake images of a dead 18-year-old and feeding them into an open investigation, and every one of those artifacts gets swallowed whole by somebody who already decides how this ends. The pressure has gone somewhere ugly. Ashley Cole posted screenshots of death threats aimed at her family and said she deactivated her Facebook account out of fear for her children's safety. Shepard told ABC News that he and other friends who were on the island have been threatened too. The FBI told ABC it's working to address interstate threats received by people connected to the case. Nobody in this story has been charged with anything. Sheriff John Ledbetter says his office has interviewed more than 60 witnesses, including the three friends who were on the boat with Nolan. He confirmed the FBI is helping examine digital evidence and noted that isn't unusual since Horn Island sits on federal land. FBI Jackson has said the sheriff's office is leading the investigation and will keep leading it. On July 15th, the family and their attorneys met with Jackson County District Attorney Angel Myers McElarth. Crum said afterward that the case goes to a grand jury once the sheriff's investigation is finished. The district attorney's office has said convening a grand jury doesn't imply criminality, that it's standard procedure for most unnatural or suspicious deaths in that county. Nolan's phone has its own subplot. Crump's team took possession of it for what he called a speedy independent examination. Ledbetter told ABC News that Crump hadn't turned the phone over to his investigators. After the meeting with the district attorney, both sides agreed to a mutual inspection. Crump's experts and the county's experts working on the same device. The single most important object in this case is a dead kid's cell phone, and it's now spent weeks as a negotiation. That's an enormous amount of activity. It's produced no cause of death and no manner of death. The state medical examiner's findings sat behind toxicology testing, which does routinely run weeks. The independent autopsy in Washington, D.C., which Crum said Colin Kaepernick helped fund, was announced as imminent as July 10th, delayed over transport problems, then described as coming very soon on July 11th. More than 60 witnesses, federal help, two autopsies, wall-to-wall national coverage, not one released finding about how an 18-year-old ended up in that water, but everybody's got their story and they say they know what happened. I'm telling you, we don't. We don't as of right now. And there are a lot of sides to this, and every single one of them deserves investigation, a voice, and to be heard. There are two categories of material in this case, and they don't weigh the same. The first one is verifiable. A boat left a dock at 9:56. It arrived at 11:14. A distress call went out around 4. The boat left at 4:31. A park ranger found a body in the water at 8:45 on a Monday morning. Those things happened, and no amount of arguing moves them. The second category is everything stacked on top of that, and it's all conjecture. Does the young woman's account hold up, or do the three young men's? Is a phone on the dashboard normal or sinister? Does an empty Snapchat mean somebody deleted something or that nobody was posting? Does a body surfacing Monday instead of Sunday mean a current or something worse? Some of those questions get well-informed guesses. They're all still guesses. My read is worth exactly what yours is worth, which isn't much, because neither one of us was standing on that sandbar. The people making AI images don't know more. The people who decided on day one that this was a racially motivated killing in Mississippi don't know more. Neither do the people who decided on day one that it was a simple drowning and the families being used. Nobody arguing about this online knows more than a sheriff who's interviewed 60 witnesses and can't tell you how this young man died. One group knows more. And it's a small group. It's whoever stood within eyesight of Nolan Wells between 3 o'clock and 4:31 that afternoon, if there was anybody watching him. Some of those people have talked to investigators. Mississippi Today reported that others are afraid to, worry that giving a statement drops them under a microscope or into the internet. Given the threats flying around, that fear tracks. It's also the exact reason that ours stays blank. Nolan's parents have told a story about him from when he was a toddler. They were in the middle of an argument, and he ran into a room in a diaper and started dancing until they quit. His father put the family rule plainly. If you go with 5, you come back with 5. His high school coach said his character spoke louder than his accomplishments. His mother said he never met a stranger that he didn't like. She asked people planning to demonstrate on his behalf to keep it peaceful, because that's what he would have wanted. He didn't like fights. He didn't even like arguments. And now look what's happened all around him. His funeral was set for July 20th at Center Point Church in Ocean Springs with visitation from 9 to 11 and a celebration of life afterward at the Jackson County Fairgrounds. That would be happening as I'm literally recording this. Crum said Al Sharpton agreed to officiate and that Tyler Perry covered the cost, and his mother said the rest of it, but as plainly as it can be said, this is not how she wanted the world to meet her son. I'm not sure her son would want the same introduction either. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. We'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.